You're listening to the Body Pros podcast coverage of IAS 2007, the fourth International AIDS Society conference on HIV pathogenesis, treatment, and prevention. Sydney, Australia, July 22nd through July 25th, 2007.
Welcome. This is Bonnie Goldman, editorial director of The Body Pro. I'm in Sydney, Australia at IAS 2007, one of the year's major HIV conferences. I have here with me now Dr. Annette Sohn. Dr. Sohn is an assistant professor in the Division of Pediatric Infectious Diseases of the University of California, San Francisco. Dr. Sohn is based in Ho Chi Minh City, Vietnam, where she directs a pediatric HIV research program. Dr. Sohn just delivered a moving plenary presentation on pediatric HIV treatment issues. In this podcast, you'll hear Dr. Sohn first summarize her presentation, and then I'll ask her some follow-up questions.
Only 15% of pediatric treatment need around the world is being met. This is about half of overall global treatment coverage. And the greatest disparity is in sub-Saharan Africa, where children represent 14% of those who need ART, but only 6% of those who receive it. From multi-center studies in Africa, we know that the children under treatment there are older, sicker, and more likely to die than their adult counterparts. This is largely because we are not identifying more HIV-positive women during pregnancy, and we lack the ability to diagnose their infants, so we don't know they are infected until they are already very sick. By that time, it often is too late to prevent opportunistic infections and maximize the treatment benefits of antiretroviral therapy. Research presented at this and other recent conferences have increasingly proven that we are waiting too long to treat HIV-positive children in resource-limited settings. When we have the capacity to treat children, we are still splitting adult-sized tablets into child-sized pieces. Although this has been effective, it is not optimal. Children need a wider variety of potent and well-tolerated first- and second-line antiretroviral formulations, and they must be affordable for national programs to procure. We have limited data on antiretroviral resistance among children in resource-limited settings, but what we are seeing is concerning. If we want children to have a chance at a lifetime of treatment, pediatric providers need better access to laboratory monitoring tests, including viral load, in order to effectively manage children. Parallel to these clinical efforts, we should recognize the impact that poverty, death, orphanhood, stigma, and violence have on a family's ability to care for their children. Providing social support for a child's family is as much a priority as the clinical interventions we offer. Finally, I would like to emphasize the importance of pediatric HIV research. Our prevention of mother-to-child transmission programs and pediatric antiretroviral treatment strategies have all been based on the results of studies and clinical trials. Research funding to develop the capacity of local investigators and build research infrastructure is urgently needed to help us provide the best possible care and treatment to children with HIV.
So tell me, what you were mentioning some of the difference with treating children in the developing world is that it's a whole different world of a whole package, and there's wars and there's poverty, and so it's different. So how is it difficult just even to get them the treatment if they have it? Is adherence a problem?
I think the first thing to remember and to respect is that the scale of HIV is very different from a developing country context than it is from the country where I was trained in the United States. And so we're dealing with millions and millions of people in sub-Saharan Africa, in Asia, around the world, where a country's population, maybe even 20 or more percent of their entire population might have HIV. It's a very, very different public health emergency than it is in the United States. For example, I think for children, the biggest challenge is preventing mother-to-child transmission, which was not the focus of my presentation today, but really is the cornerstone for reducing the number of children with HIV in the world. And so we need to identify the moms who have HIV and then be able to offer them interventions to prevent transmission of HIV to their children.
Uh-huh. It's sort of amazing that, you know, usually you to get somebody's to move somebody, we talk about children, and we talk about that that children, you know, are at risk. And here in the world of HIV, there's
so many years have passed and no one has done anything about the children. Why do you think that is?
I think that people have been trying to do things about the children. People who've been working in pediatric HIV their whole lives might take issue with that statement. I think there are many people who have been trying to advocate for children, but like with so many advances, they usually occur first in the adults and then children sort of secondarily. In the United States, we had this rule through the U.S. Food and Drug Administration requiring, it was called the pediatric rule, where pharmaceutical companies that were developing drugs for adults needed to show that they were making, there was due diligence to provide research or conduct research related to children. And I don't think that we have quite that same focus for antiretrovirals. As a global community, we want so much to be able to see new antiretrovirals, and I am not, I certainly would agree with that, but I think that we don't need to have the very fancy new antiretrovirals today. What we need are the basic, simple, first-line antiretrovirals just dosed more appropriately for children and packaged more appropriately for children, and that is what has been taking so long.
And whose fault is this, do you think?
I don't know if it's any one person's fault or not. I think that if you just look at the numbers and the market forces, how many millions of adults need antiretroviral treatment and how many millions of children need it. Actually, according to WHO, about 780,000 children need treatment around the world. So that number, although incredibly large and staggering to us, is still just part of what the overall treatment need is around the world. So the focus has been on adults. And again, I'm not saying that that's wrong. I just think that there need to be parallel efforts to provide better support for children's issues.
Uh-huh. How many pediatric formulations are there currently in the developing world?
As far as fixed-dose combinations of three drugs, for example, there are none that have been pre-qualified by the World Health Organization or tentatively approved by the U.S. FDA. There are currently four under review at the WHO, and the FDA is not able to share that information. It's considered confidential until the time that the report or the approval is released. And so I don't know how many are under review there. But there are other pediatric fixed-dose combinations that are being used today. Clinton Foundation procures a drug for their programs in India, and that drug has not been pre-qualified yet. I don't know if that's under review because, again, WHO can't release that information. But there are a few different combinations around the world. It's just until they're pre-qualified, until they're tentatively approved by the U.S. FDA, donors may be limited in their ability to procure them for their programs.
And which developing world country do you think is doing the best in terms of helping children? Is there anyone that stands out? Is Thailand more focused on pediatric AIDS than another country? Or
I think that it's really hard for me, certainly. I don't think I could give you a particular country. But I do recognize that there are efforts to support children in every country. And you had said earlier that people want to provide support for children. And that is true. The people in these countries where children are dying, they love their children. They want to protect their children. Children may be a motivating factor for an adult to adhere to therapy. They're doing it not for themselves, but for their families. And so I think the way to ask the question is, do we all care about the children? And the answer to that is yes. Whether or not we're all capable within our individual countries to have the infrastructure to deliver care to them, it depends on so many different factors.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Also included in this podcast is a question that Craig McClure, the International AIDS Society Executive Director, asked Dr. Sun at a press conference.
Dr. Sun, you outlined so eloquently, and it's been a buzz at this conference and in the last couple of years at Toronto as well, the catastrophe, the shocking failure of us as a global community in delivering treatment and care to children. You mentioned that while there are many fixed-dose, simple combinations of drugs, both brand name and generic drugs available now for adults, that there are shockingly few for children. Can you comment a little bit more on that and what you think is currently being done to address that problem and what needs to be done?
So actually, Charlie Jilks of the WHO came up to me after the presentation and said that they are about to release a report sometime in the next month, I believe, that is based on the abstract that was presented at this conference by Siobhan Crowley, talking about different formulations, fixed dose combinations of two drugs, for example, and lower dosages of certain antiretrovirals. And by presenting this report, saying that these are the optimal doses, they've actually been in contact with pharmaceutical manufacturers in order to encourage them to develop drugs of that concentration or that fixed dose. And so he's quite hopeful that by releasing this report, more manufacturers will follow suit. Some of you may know that Abbott just announced just a few days ago that they're submitting for marketing approval a lower dose of their drug Kaletra, the lopinavir-ritonavir combination. And because Kaletra cannot be crushed, it needs to be swallowed whole, small children cannot swallow the adult size of Kaletra. So by producing a half-size dose, small children will find that easier to swallow. It's also heat-stable, so it doesn't need to be refrigerated. And that's the kind of drug that we need generic manufacturers to develop, because although, as you have also heard at this conference, there are pricing issues with how Abbott markets their product globally. And so we need more of the generic versions of the appropriate dose drugs, and hopefully that we will start to see that in the coming years.
The opinions expressed by hosts or interviewees in this podcast do not constitute professional advice, should not be considered substitutes for professional services, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of Body Health Resources Corporation or its sponsors. Please see the full disclaimer online at thebodypro.com. If you have comments or questions, please contact us.
This has been a report on IAS 2007 from The Body Pro. For more podcasts and full coverage of this conference, visit us online at thebodypro.com/IAS2007.